Shalom, Mishpocha. Shalom, family. Mishpocha is a Hebrew word. It means family. And we're the Mishpocha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people, where the middle wall of separation has come down to form one new man. Getting ready, Mishpocha, to blow the grandest shofar, or the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone everywhere to hear the good news. We want everyone everywhere to be red hot for the Messiah. My guest, I guess red hot is an understatement for you, Michelle. Her name is Michelle Perry. She's the head of Iris Ministries Sudan. And she does not have an orphanage. They were orphans at one time, but she has 77 members of her family. And she picks some up off the street, others in various ways. And she's in process of building a village for them to live in. She was born with something that would cause most people to be pretty bitter. She was born with one kidney missing, one leg missing, and curvature of the spine, where she's got, a couple of rods, steel rods, mm-hmm, inside. But you told me, and you're the most joyful person. I agree with Joyce, my guest coordinator. You are the most joyful person I have ever met. And I may have difficulty doing this interview if you keep that up. Sudan is your home.
It is. It is. It's... I have prayed for the last decade that God would give me the worst place he could trust me with. And so when I was moving into Sudan...
Is that one of the worst places on the face of this earth?
Well, actually, when I moved there in 2006, it was, according to one of the think tanks associated with the UN, it was the number one most failed state on the planet. So I said, yay, God, I got a promotion.
AIDS pretty rampant there.
Because the borders have been closed up until recently due to the war, not as much as in some parts of Africa, but it's skyrocketing now.
What's your ultimate, the ultimate that God has for you in Sudan?
I believe it's to see a movement of love that literally will sweep from southern Sudan into the north and into the Arabic-speaking Islamic world to carry the glory of God and to carry the love of Jesus into the darkness.
Now, I understand... Your kids fight to see who can go into a hospital to pray for the sick. Tell me about that.
Well, we divide them up into teams, and regularly we like to take them in to pray for the sick in the hospitals, because that's what Jesus did, and he prayed for the sick and they got healed. And so we take them into the hospitals, and we've had a couple instances where, you know, more have wanted to come than we've had space for. So we've had to say, okay, no, you need to wait and be patient. And I'm sorry, you really can't go today. You just kind of pushed him down. And so you just can't go. You need to get your heart right with Jesus. And you can go tomorrow.
Now, Michelle, you had a heart's desire when revival was going real strong at the Toronto Airport Church. Mm-hmm. You wanted to go there. Why did you want to go there so bad?
In 2000, I read a little blurb in a little article about the bakers in Mozambique, and I didn't know who they were. I thought Heidi got her visitation on the floor of the Toronto airport. I didn't know it was a church. So I started praying for,
So you wanted to go to the airport?
Yeah.
Okay.
I started praying for visitations in airports. And I figured God's not a respecter of airports, so he could meet me in Heathrow. And but I found out about a year and a half later that it was a church, and it was a move of God's Spirit that was very precious that had been going on there. And I wanted very desperately to go, but it was a timing issue. And as in most things in my life, I said, God, if you want me to do that, and it's a desire in my heart, then I put it in your hands, and you make it happen at the right time.
So the day arrived. You got there. What happened?
I found out that I got there, and it was amazing, because what I found out is God answered my prayer, because I prayed, God, I want everything they have. And when I got there, it was like coming home. It was like normal to me, because it's just being in God's presence is what I'd done for 5 years since I'd read the article. And so, and I had no clue. I didn't know. And so I got there, and just, it was amazing to be in a corporate setting that understood about pressing in and pursuing the presence of God and just waiting on Him and waiting.
The presence of God is very important to you.
He's everything. He's everything.
So you were corporately pressing into the presence of God, and what happened to you?
Well, I just kind of got undone. I mean, I was just praying and God took me up and showed me this huge table in heaven, and it seated around it were thousands of children and the poorest of the poor and the blind and the prostitutes and the beggars and the gangbangers and the worst of the worst, the cast-offs of society. And they were all very hungry and they were all looking at me. And I thought, okay, help God. And Jesus walked in and he had this huge platter of food and he put it, I'm thinking, oh, whew, he's here and he'll feed everybody. Well, no, he put the food right down in front of me and he said, beloved, eat. And I said, no, I can't eat. Do you see all these hungry people? Well, let's give them the food and then you can feed me and it'll be okay. He said, no, you don't understand, eat. And so he was pretty stern. So I did. I took a piece of bread and I ate. And the minute that I ate, the minute that I took a bite of this bread, everybody around the table had it. And he really used that to begin speaking to me as we can't give away what we don't have and we can't impart what's not a part of us. And so it's so important to eat of him and drink of him. And now, you know, I went from eating and drinking for me to eating and drinking for a nation. So it's a lot of eating and drinking going on.
I was told that you had your own personal box of Kleenex. You were crying so much.
Yeah, that happens to me sometimes when I get in God's presence. You know, it was a soaking in the glory conference and I just had to laugh thinking, this is a whole different definition of soaking through a box of Kleenex. But God, I don't even know fully what God did, except that I do know that he enlarged my heart and I got a chance to experience his presence and he started to change things on the inside of me that were pivotal for the journey to come.
So you decided at that point that you were going to be involved with children and with people that had problems. And from what I understand, you thought that was going to be India.
Well, I had lived in India previously to that. I'd been in India 2 years already, and then God moved me back to the United States, basically kicking and screaming. I'd worked with at-risk kids for years at that point, but I was kind of tired of it and thought maybe I get to graduate to adults. And no, I didn't get to. In fact, I'm working with more children now than I ever have, and I wouldn't trade it for the world because they're my greatest teachers.
Well, how did you know it wasn't India but Sudan?
Well, God said back overseas, so I figured I love India. I've got the clothes. I know the language where I was living and it just made sense. So I was making preparations to move in the middle of me buying a plane ticket online. It's really good to listen to God all the time. He kind of interrupted me and said, I'm so glad you love India. So do I, but can I send you to Sudan instead?
That's simple.
Well, and I said, God, Sudan's in Africa. That's the wrong continent. He said, yes, I know where Sudan is. And I thought, well, that's, I'm very happy he knows his geography. And because we live there, I live there now. But I gave him my life when I was 7 years old. So where I live is not respective of anything but where he wants me to live.
Out of curiosity, when you went to Sudan after being told to go there, did you go with someone or by yourself?
No, I'm really on a team of four, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and me. But I was the only, I mean, most people would say I went in alone, and I rented a car, hired a car.
You use a crutch, you're there by yourself. Mm-hmm. What about the finances?
That's a really good question. We trust God, and that's been one of my biggest areas of having opportunity to grow in faith in the last 16, 18 months since we've started, because we live in the second most expensive place in the world.
I'm going to take you back to Toronto again. This experience sounds wonderful, but tell me, what were you praying when you were on the floor there? What were you asking God for?
More of him.
You know, that reminds me of a song by Grace Williams and the CD that we're offering this week, Firefall. Let's hear Consume Me. And I'm believing that as you listen to it, the love of God will begin to consume you. That was a cut called Consume Me from the CD we're making available this week by Grace Williams, Firefall. And I can tell you for myself, I feel so much peace. It puts me in a stress-free zone. It puts me in a demon-free zone. There is such an anointing on this CD that I urge you to get a copy. You will be so grateful. It's available for donation of $20 and we'll include the brochure about Iris Ministries Sudan when you write. If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpucha or Chalitzim, write to me. Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. Or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape or CD of this week's broadcast, send a donation of $10 or more to Sid Roth, that's S-I-D-R-O-T-H, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. To see our television show, It's Supernatural, or our archives, or subscribe to our radio and TV podcasts, look us up on the web at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.